I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second.
You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty.
You do not. Congress does not regulate Wall Street. Wall Street regulates Congress.
In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And welcome back to the Election Protection Bulletin with investigative reporter Greg Palast, author of the best-selling Best Democracy Money Can Buy. I'm Dennis Bernstein. And Greg, welcome back.
Glad to be with you in studio.
In studio today. Glad to have you in person. Today we're going to explore the mystery of the absentee ballot, which you've written about in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. But the absentee ballot can have a significant impact on who wins and who loses an election. And, well, what's the history of the ballot? Where does it come from?
Here's the thing. Yes, absentee ballots should have an effect on elections by counting them. The
exactly.
problem is that their big effect is that they don't get counted. So, ladies and gentlemen, advice number one, don't go postal. If you can avoid mailing in your ballot, if you're willing to stand the hassle of standing in line, preferably in early voting, do that. Why? Because I looked at the official figures when I was working with Bobby Kennedy, and we found that 488,000 absentee ballots generally don't get counted in a federal election. Now, MIT also looked at this. Some professors at MIT also looked at this. They say, no, my numbers are wrong. It's not about 500,000. It's 2.5 million absentee ballots get mailed in and never counted. And in their case, because they're also counting those where you're supposed to get your absentee ballot and it never arrives, okay? Now, how can they throw away your ballot? It's your ballot, right? You know, if you go in a voting booth, they don't say, take your ballot, rip it up in front of you and throw it in the garbage can. Actually, they do, but that's for another show. But but if you're mailing it in, you are asking for it. When next to the stamp, you ought to put, throw me away, please, because they're going to do it in about 1 in 7 ballots. Now, and very important, if it were random, it wouldn't matter, Dennis. The problem is that it's anything but random. The U.S. Civil Rights Commission has determined that about your chance of your ballot getting chucked, getting spoiled, as their official term is, I want to repeat this one from before, 900% higher if you're black than if you're white. 900% higher that your vote will be tossed in the garbage if you're black than you're white. They say, how do they know whose ballot it is? Excuse me. You've just put your return address on it, your name, your address, your zip code. You've signed your ballot if you're mailing it in. They know exactly who you are and where you're coming from. And here's the thing. How can they just throw out your ballot? It's real simple. You used a middle initial when you signed it, and you didn't register with a middle initial. They don't like your signature. It's a suspect signature, meaning someone else could have filled out your ballot. Now, did they go arrest this person? No, they just chucked your ballot. Did they tell you? No, they didn't. Only one state will tell you if your ballot was chucked, and that's Oregon.
So you don't even know if you never voted, if you were
right.
disenfranchised. You don't have the slightest idea. You assume you voted.
You assumed you voted. You mail in your ballot, and you think, hey, man, this is just democracy like in the third grade when they count all the raised hands. Uh-uh. I just told you 500,000, by my count, 2.5 million absentee ballots chucked, according to MIT. Now, what are the things? Postage due. When you had a big ballot like California, postage due. Use the wrong envelope. And in some states, by the way, if this is your first time voting, you got to include your original birth certificate or your passport to prove that you are a citizen. You have to literally mail it to these guys and hope that they'll mail it back to you and that they'll like what you sent them and count your ballot, okay? I know a lot of people are really afraid of going to voting booths, especially with the new computer voting. They'll say, oh, they can steal my vote on a computer, so I'm going to mail it in. So you think someone's going to steal your vote by manipulating the software, but you'll mail it to them and they'll kindly open it and count it the way you want. Think again, Jack. Now, who falls for these dumb tricks? Now, let me give you another one. In the state of California, which is, by most accounts, one of the cleanest states, okay, there was a race for mayor of San Diego. Okay, Donna Frye was running as a write-in candidate. The Democrats didn't have a candidate, so she was the Democrat who had to be written in. And she won, despite it was the biggest election ever won by a write-in candidate for a big city, San Diego. She won by the number of people who voted for Donna exceeded the number of people who voted for anyone else. But there was one problem, the bubbles, okay? If you signed as your preference and you actually wrote out Donna Frye for mayor, the Democratic candidate, but you didn't fill in the bubble next to her name, or you put a check or an X, but you didn't fill in the bubble next to her name, your ballot was thrown out. So even if you wrote in the name Donna Frye for write-in candidate, you didn't fill in the bubble, it went out the window. Now, how can they do that? Because the Supreme Court, until Bush v. Gore, always had a rule that it's the intent of the voter that counts. Now, someone who writes in Donna Frye, what do you think their intent is? That they want to write in her name, but they didn't fill in the bubble. This is just one example. But now, since Bush v. Gore, they will come up with any little stinky trick, fly poop on your ballot, wrong signature, postage due, you name it, at least a half a million votes down the toilet. Don't go postal.
You're listening to the Election Protection Bulletin. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Greg Palast, and we're talking about, well, the chapter in his book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, is called Going Postal. Greg, I wanted to ask you, who makes the decision to throw the ballot out? Is that partisan?
Oh, boy, is it partisan. We have secretaries of state, the 50 secretaries of state in America, like Secretary of State Catherine Harris, who counted or miscounted or didn't count and did the job on us in Florida. So the United States is the only nation in the world where you have pledged partisan people who count the ballots. So in the case of Catherine Harris in Florida in 2000, she was co-chair of the Bush for re-election campaign, and she was in charge of deciding whose vote should count and who shouldn't. In 2004, Ken Blackwell was the chairman of the Bush re-election campaign, and he was, as Secretary of State of Ohio, in charge of counting which ballots count. And once again, we're going to 2016, and you'll love this. This guy named Husted is the Secretary of State of Ohio. This is the swing state of swing states, and he's the guy who's going to determine whether your ballot counts or not. We've had games, for example, if you submitted one of my favorites actually was submitting absentee ballots, but they had the wrong envelope in Ohio. That's because they gave black voters the wrong envelope to submit their ballots. So when they sent in, they send you your ballot with an envelope, and then they disqualify because you had the wrong envelope because you used the envelope that they gave you. Ha! It's like, hey, man,
the
rules are the rules. If you don't understand democracy Ohio style, then go vote them out of office. Of course, your vote may not count. So you have a massive, it's not a small problem. And we're heading into an election in November where we're looking at least one-third of the ballots will be mailed in. One-third. And we figure that if you are African-American, the chance your ballot will be chucked in the garbage is about 1 in 7.
One-third, 1 out of 3 people vote by mail?
By mail, and coming in this November is the projection. It's gone up from above a quarter. People don't realize. We talk about Election Day, but people vote in advance because it's convenient. In California, you have automatic sign me up to vote by mail. And the problem is that yes, they and by the way, MIT, one of the big things that they found is that millions of people don't get the ballots that they've requested. Then you go in to vote, and they say your vote gets thrown out after you vote in precinct because you've already voted absentee, but you never got your ballot. Tough luck, Jack. And remember, it's not random. It's partisan. It's partisan, and it is, as we've seen all over the country, they know which votes they're disqualifying. They know which votes they're disqualifying each time because you've got your name on it. And it's a trick that the Supreme Court never used to allow. The voter's intent always ruled. You couldn't just say, oh, that has an extra mark on the ballot in the corner, or there's an extra initial, or someone forgot to add junior, or they did add junior and they're not supposed to because that's not how they registered. This is the type of games that are being played. In some states, like Kentucky, you have to sign your ballot in two places. In some states, you have to notarize your absentee ballot, okay? And you don't know this stuff until they don't count it. And except Oregon, again, it's no one lets you know if your ballot was chucked in the garbage.
All right, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is a weekly segment, a weekly podcast, Election Protection Bulletin, which Greg Palast has generously agreed to do with us here on Flashpoints every Wednesday. Now, I also, as we do these important things on these election protection bulletins on Wednesdays, I also want to include into it the breaking stories of the day. And now we're seeing, I'd like to ask you to sort of dissect a story that just came out on the electronic version of the New York Times. And because it's part of the same establishment deciding essentially who's going to win, who's going to lose, who will the candidates be, who is acceptable, who isn't. And the corporate news cycle determines that.
Yeah. In fact, actually, you know, in general, when I've been reporting the theft of, about the theft of U.S. elections for years, front page news, top of the nightly news in Britain for BBC and The Guardian. When I wrote about black people getting their names wiped off the voter rolls back in 2000 when Catherine Harris removed tens of thousands of black people from the voter rolls, that elected Bush, that was top of the nightly news in Britain, in the U.S., completely blacked out.
And they
out.
Had access, right? CBS could have, they had a contract.
Yeah, ABC actually had a contract to run our news. And then CBS said that they would run the story. Dan Rather's people called me and then they backed out because they said, you'll love this, Dennis. This is true. Dan Rather's people, when I said that black people removed from the voter rolls, and I had the lists in my hands, the letters in my hands from Jeb Bush's office, they said, I said, why didn't you run the story?
He was governor of Florida.
Jeb Bush was governor of Florida. His brother's running for president. And they said that they called Jeb Bush's office, and he said, it's not true.
And that was it. Couldn't do the story.
They couldn't even do the story. That, like, The Guardian and BBC say this, and Bush said, no. Hey, Bush said it's not true. So obviously the story didn't stand up. So this is continuing to happen. In 2004, when BBC and The Guardian ran my story about the theft of the election in Ohio, the Times rant did pick up that story in the front page. It said, internet rumors of election theft easily debunked. That was the headline. So I'm just an internet rumor, Greg Palast from BBC. Right. So, you know, I'm laughing about it, but it is.
And they always do this because if they admit it, if they acknowledge it, they have to. It demonstrates the ridiculous nature of what they're doing and calling journalism. And we're going to get back before we leave. We're going to offer people some suggestions about how to protect themselves. But I did want to come to this. So now you got the New York Times in Nevada.
Well, first, what's the Democratic Party up to? They had 64 Bernie Sanders delegates. Some of these, by the way, were committee chairmen. They were county Democratic Party chairmen, lifelong Democrats, were disqualified, 64 Bernie Sanders delegates, on the grounds that they were Republicans. These are lifelong Democrats. That's why they were at the convention as right. chosen delegates. As it turns out, by the weird way that caucuses work, Bernie Sanders had more delegates than Hillary Clinton. It was a very close race in Nevada. They basically marked 64 Democratic delegates. They said that they were Republicans. Suddenly, these guys, people all lost their votes, and Hillary won the caucus by 35 delegate votes. 35. So Hillary won by 35 after they knocked out 64. Now, so some of the Sanders people didn't like that. So what was the report? The report was not how Sanders delegates somehow were excluded from their rightful vote for president of the United States for the nominee. It was rather, and this is the headline from the New York Times, from, quote, from Bernie Sanders supporters, death threats over delegates. Bernie Sanders, death threats, okay? Uncle Bernie threatening delegates, threatening.
The Bernie bird.
And now here's the interesting thing, ladies and gentlemen. Supposedly the story was that the Sanders people were threatening, were leveling death threats at the chairwoman of the Democratic Party, who overruled all the voice votes, all the delegate credentials, and ramrodded Hillary Clinton through as the winner of these extra Nevada delegates. And she claimed that they were going after her grandchildren, that they were grandchildren kidnappers or grandnappers, whatever you call that, and that they'd leveled death threats. And so the New York Times, I was interested, where'd they get this? They didn't reproduce any of these threatening notes. And then they had two audio recordings. They had an audio recording in which someone complained and said, this is horrible, and said, you ought to be in jail, but nothing about a death threat. And usually when you steal votes, you do go to jail. I mean, this is... I talked to Bobby Kennedy, who works with me as a civil rights lawyer, and he said, when we talked about shenanigans like this, he says, this is what you go to jail for. Suddenly the Voting Rights Act still exists. You're not really allowed to do this type of monkey business. So someone did suggest, hey, lady, you ought to be in prison for eliminating votes. But okay, that's someone's opinion. But the idea of death threats, and here's the interesting thing. This is not the Post, the National Enquirer. This is not at a supermarket checkout counter. This is the New York Times. And I will note that this story was quietly removed.
This story isn't up anymore?
This story was taken off by the Times. They didn't say they're retracting it, but it suddenly went poof about Bernie Sanders people and their death threats against the grandchildren of the Democratic Party leadership. The problem here is, okay, it's funny, it's weird, it's cute, you know Bernie the kidnapper. But what's sad about it is that this is how the so-called liberal press and supposedly good journalists are operating. If I wrote a story like this for The Guardian, I would be imprisoned by my editors. This is what stands for news and news coverage of the issues. So we don't have the issues. We have death threats.
You know, it's interesting. This just comes up again and again. I'm just flashing back to Tamara Keefe of National Public Radio, who kept referring to Bernie Sanders' campaign, aggressive, effective campaign, as, you know, does Hillary have a chance? Is Bernie going to pave the way for Trump? Well, she says, if he keeps battering her the way he is, battering, and that was in the context of Trump. That was the day after Trump made all his statements. All of a sudden, you've got an NPR balanced correspondent covering both campaigns, but Bernie is a batterer.
Well, it was unbelievable. I mean, what do you expect from National Petroleum Radio? This is why I've been taken off NPR. I literally, you'll love this. This is a true story. I was complaining actually about, I was supposed to be on Media Matters, their media program. And of course, they wanted me to complain about right-wing newspapers or something, you know, the New York Post or something like that. And I said, when I was about to go on the air, I said, well, what are you going to talk about? I was going to say biased coverage by National Public Radio. And literally 40 seconds before airtime, they said, we can't have you on.
Really?
We can't have you on. So thank you for having me on, Dennis.
Well, you are quite welcome.
Because I'm no longer welcome at National Petroleum Radio. But this is the problem. This is a big problem, and that we're not getting the news we ought to get, or even the stories about what are their positions on anything? But that, you know, besides the substance, it's all
totally
horse race. But their coverage of Sanders, for example, and by the way, I'm not even a Sanders person. I'm just a journalist. I haven't taken sides.
No
here.
No sides here.
And I'm really not kidding. I really don't have a side here.
And that's important in this report.
You know, and they said, headline, New York Times. Liberal economists say Sanders' numbers don't add up. And they cited this guy, Goolsbee, from the University of Chicago, where I went, which is a right-wing cesspool. And that's the liberal economist that they cited. And so the liberal economists say Sanders' numbers don't add up, yet the positive effect of Sanders, basically another stimulus program, was well measured by the economists at Amherst. And again, this is not whether I like Sanders, dislike him, I agree with his programs or don't. This is a matter of the one true analysis that has been done has shown that he will increase employment and increase national income. You know, this is the same party which said that Obama's stimulus program came from heaven itself. And now they're saying that almost an identical program by Bernie Sanders is obviously the numbers don't add up and it's nuts.
We're going to have to draw it to a close. You are listening to the Election Protection Bulletin. But 30, 60 seconds, Greg, we talked about absentee ballot. I guess the advice here is don't do it.
Don't go postal. And that is suggestion number four from Steal Back Your Vote, Protect Yourself. We have a comic book that I wrote with Bobby Kennedy and Ted Rall. It is called Steal Back Your Vote, and you can download it for absolutely nothing gratis. Just go to gregpalast.com, and download Steal Back Your Vote. Think of it as protection for your ballot. It's a ballot condom. And one of the pieces of advice is, and we'll give you another piece every single week, but today's lesson is don't go postal.
Thank you, Greg Palast. You're listening to the Election Protection Bulletin. Stay tuned.
I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second.
You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty.
You do not. Congress does not regulate Wall Street. Wall Street regulates Congress. I just got his duties. If only I could.